welcome to the Jesus, Sex, and Politics podcast. I'm Micah, and Nathan's not here again, but we're going to talk about all those things that probably scare you. But you know what? It shouldn't be that scary today. We've got another great guest on the line with us. He is running for Congress up in the 3rd District, which is kind of Fort Wayne area in Indiana. And he's a guy who has jumped in, felt the call, and we are happy to have him here. His name is Grant Bucher. Grant, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, Micah. Boy, you are great at this.
Well, it's we've had a few episodes of practice, so I think this is like the 106th episode or something like that. So we've done it a few times, but I appreciate that. So, but yeah,
I think this is my 6th. So I've got about 100 to go to catch up with you. All right,
that's awesome. Yeah, you'll get there, man. It's just one foot after the other, and then before long, you got 2,000 episodes under your belt. So at least that's what they tell me. So. But hey, man, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us why you're running for Congress and just kind of the heart behind what you're doing. And I love that you love the Lord, but you're taking a step of faith into this world of governance. And I think we need more people to do that. So tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah. So I am Grant Bucher. I was born and raised in Northeast Indiana, in Wells County specifically. I attended Purdue University for undergrad, studied engineering. I got married to my wife. She studied retail management at Purdue. And then we moved back to Fort Wayne, Indiana to begin our careers. Mine was in construction. Hers, she opened her own interior design business. And it was great living in Fort Wayne. Ultimately, had an opportunity to continue working for my same firm, but travel the country. I was working out in California and Arizona, Texas, Idaho, and Michigan for a time. And had 2 kiddos along the way. Our oldest is Grayson. He's turning 7 next week. Youngest is Gentry. He's 4. And just a blessed opportunity to be working in the construction industry for a company called Chambon Son. But then about 2 years ago, I changed from Chambon to begin working at Wygant Construction to give me the opportunity to be home more at night, because traveling the country meant being away from home a lot of nights. And that that wasn't a viable way to continue living our lives. So started working at Wygant Construction and have had the opportunity to manage about $65 million worth of work for them, both in Steuben County, very northeast corner of the state, and then at Hillsdale College in Michigan. A lot of people probably familiar with that university and the things that they are doing for the, I guess, conservative movement in the nation. So. About a year ago, so construction's been my life, politics not so much. But a year ago, sensed a very specific call to get into a very specific race. And, so we are in it and going as hard as we can, while still managing, raising a family and, working full time. But I guess I say we, because it is a whole family endeavor. The boys are going around with us to tons of events across Northeast Indiana. It's just been really wonderful. I had somebody share with me early on, though. They said, Grant, if God is calling you to do something, there's a reason why. You need to find that why. And I'm not sure that I'm going to know all of it this side of glory, but I am inspired by a couple of things. And the couple things that I'm really passionate about right now are, one, we just need to change the narrative in our communities. There's so much division between right and left, between right and right, between left and left. We just find a way to faction ourselves out so much that we need to take a step back and see the things that we are all united on, focus on those a little bit more. And then once we realize that I guess we can have rational conversations with another human being, then we can start to debate policy a little bit more. With all the anger and yelling and name calling, I feel like we're just losing our identity. We're losing our soul as a nation. And so I guess I want to take a step out and say, hey, I'm willing to do things a little bit differently. I don't know if it's a winning campaign strategy. It's not really a strategy at all. It's a conviction. So, yeah, we'll see as time goes on what all that entails. But ultimately, in this race, I want to see God be glorified, and whatever the outcome is, the outcome is.
That's awesome, man. Well, I love the story. I love your heart behind it. And you were mentioning to me the other day at an event in Jay County that you were doing work for Hillsdale, like you just said. But you also said that you got president of Hillsdale College, Larry Arn. I think you got him kind of on your side to some extent. He's a good guy, and so you know, he really is a bold conservative in our world of academia, and so that probably will go a long way. But it's that's my old stomping grounds up there in Hillsdale, Michigan, and I love what the college is doing, and the fact that you get to work with them is, at least on a little bit on the construction side, is got to be a blessing. So
But I got to ask, when you lived up there, were Handmade or Hillsdale Brewing Company there?
The Brewing Company was there, yes. Handmade was not, but the Brewing Company, I remember, and we had gone in there a couple times, so yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we go there about every Thursday.
Do you really?
Rotating soups. And good soups there.
It's good stuff. Yes, there's some cool little joints in Hillsdale. If you're ever in the area, you got to go check it out if you're listening to this. Hey, I'm checking out your website, Grant. It's bookerforus.com, and you've got truth, accountability, and unity. And you're kind of talking about that a little bit. Like, we've got to change the narrative. There's so much division out there. My question to you is, how do we unify around things that are just ununifiable, if that's even a way to say it? But you know, it's kind of this idea that we've got Marxists in our country. We've got people who adamantly hate the truth. They hate God. They hate the things of this nation was founded on. And I hear a lot of times, especially in the Christian world, people say, we got to have unity, unity, unity. Well, I think of like 1939 Germany, and Germany, the church in Germany, the Christians in Germany were very unified around Nazism. They were very unified around Adolf Hitler, and that whole nation was unified, but it was unified around all the wrong things. And so sure. how do you boldly proclaim truth and not compromise and still seek unity? Because is that even possible, I guess, is my question in today's culture.
Yeah, no, I am glad that you asked about that, because that's one of the things that I feel like separates my campaign from the others, but it's also one that I get challenged on the most. And so as I look at how do we bring unity in the United States, I look back at Jesus' model for what he did. You know, he was divisive for sure, but ultimately he changed the world with his message. And the way he did that was he never separated truth and love. He always led with both truth and love. So I feel like a lot of times in today's narrative, we've got the Republicans who are saying truth, 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 and then Democrats have, in my view, a twisted view of love, but they're focused on love, love, love. And I think we need to pair both of those together, what is ultimately true about the universe, and then loving what is the best thing for somebody eternally. We need to use both of those things together. And that's whenever I think that we can actually change hearts and change culture. Do I think we give in and compromise to some of the things that are just totally devoid of anything good today? Absolutely not. I don't think that if I may borrow the word woke, it's a interesting term, right? That's come to encompass a whole lot more things than it originally did. But I don't think that we say, hey, it's okay to allow our children to question who they are sexually and all that stuff, right? That's not good. We shouldn't compromise on that. But if we want to pull culture towards us in that which we believe is true, we need to do so with a posture of humility, recognizing that we are all broken and that we are all in need of a savior. And I think be more inviting and allow people to know that, you know, you have a home here in truth as well.
That's good.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying. It's always right hand, left hand kind of thing. You can't have, you would be an ineffective body if you only had the right hand. If it was just truth and no love, but in the same way, if you just had love and no truth, that also is ineffective and leads to destruction as well. And so, it's something that we wrestle with a lot as Christians, because most Christians think that Jesus just loved, and Jesus didn't just love. He brought truth, and I mean, he offended a lot of people. They didn't crucify Jesus because they loved him. They crucified him because he offended them. And so if we go into this world, I mean, Jesus even said, if the world hates you, take heart because they hated me first, but I have overcome the world. And so that's kind of this idea of, you know, I think sometimes in Christian culture, Christian American culture, we've kind of turned success into how many people love me, when really we should be saying, no, it's not about people who love us. It's about us loving them and speaking truth in a way that actually pulls them from destruction, right? I mean, it's not loving to let somebody just go speeding off the cliff of destruction and not say anything about it. It's very unloving. But you're right. The left will use sort of a twisted version of love, and they'll say, you got to love us, therefore you have to affirm everything that we do. And we as Christians will say, no, I love you, but I'm not going to affirm everything you do. Just in the same way I love my son, but I'm not going to affirm everything he does, because he doesn't do things right sometimes, right? And his feelings aren't always right. You know, I think that's the first thing I've learned as being a parent, and you probably have learned too, is that feelings, your child's feelings don't always tell the truth. And so, you know, how they feel isn't accurate of reality sometimes. And so, but it would be unloving if I just affirm my child's feelings all the time, even at their peril. And so, so all that to say, you know, I think you're hitting on something well, and that's a good point, but you're going into one of the most divisive, toxic environments if you get elected to Washington. I mean, so, you know, are you ready for the fight? I guess is a question I want to ask you. Like, there will be people literally trying to destroy you and your family and wanting to just utterly see you humiliated. Are you ready for that onslaught, that warrior mentality going into Washington?
Yeah. I'm going to say that we are never fully ready, right? But as far as like my views on how do I prepare for this, a couple things come to mind. Number one, have you ever seen the picture of the pale blue dot?
Yeah.
Okay. So for those who are listening who haven't seen that before, it's a picture that Voyager 1, as it was leaving our solar system, took one last picture of Earth. And it's just this tiny blue speck in a ray of sunlight on this massive canvas. And it's just humbling to realize that everybody who has ever lived and died, every empire that's risen and fallen, did so on that speck. And so when we realize how teeny tiny we are in the cosmos, I think it gives us good perspective on that which our life means.
Yeah.
And it's kind of not a lot, right? Life is still extremely valuable, but our value comes in because of our Creator, right? He's the one who's determined that we are valuable. And so I guess as I look at my life, I realize I'm small and there's nothing to preserve, really. Like any semblance of power I could ever amass would mean nothing in the scope of the cosmos. So I guess I'm driven to then say, okay, God, like all I want to do is glorify you. I fully expect that at some point in this political endeavor that I'm going to be crushed, that somebody is going to be out to destroy me. You know, I've already had people who in Washington say, I want to burn him to the ground. I offended some people on accident. And so it's like, I don't know. All I can say is, let it come, but may God be glorified in whatever I go through.
That's good.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, man. No, that's good. Yeah. No, I think that's good perspective. Let it come, but let God be glorified, right? In it all. Yeah. And, one of my litmus tests for, people, like either pastors or missionaries or like how effective they're being for the kingdom of God, I'll ask them, I'll say, how many people can you tell me right now that hate your guts and want to see you destroyed? And if they can't tell me anyone, that tells me that they're not being very effective for the kingdom, because in a world full of lies, the truth of God's word is very offensive. And so, you know, I think, you know, I count, you know, when Paul says count it all joy, right, when persecution comes, well, I think I'm starting to understand what he was saying. It's, man, that means you're on the right track. Like, when persecution comes, when people start going after you, you must be doing something to destroy the kingdom of darkness. And that's a great thing. And so, you know, as you enter into this political world, wherever it may lead, you know, whether it's a winning outcome on this election, or maybe it's an election down the road, just, you know, remember, count it all joy. When people start hating on you and you know you're aligned with God's word, that's a beautiful thing, because it should just be the most encouraging thing, because it tells you that, man, the devil and his minions do not like what you're doing, and they're trying to stop you. And that means you're being very effective. So I've kind of, my perspective has actually shifted in the political world over the last few years, where it's, if I'm not getting attacked, or if I'm not being vilified or hated, I'm like, well, I got to get out there and work harder, I guess, because I'm not really doing a good job, I don't think. So, but it's you're entering into a mission field, and that's some, you know, we send missionaries to very dangerous places around the world that are taking arrows and swords, but you're going to be taking arrows and swords in a different kind of way, but still very much as destructive and scary at times, but you're walking into a world that needs the gospel. So that's awesome, man.
I think to expound upon it a little bit further, I think we got to be mindful too of when we walk into things. I use an example. Back when I was a senior in high school, we took a mission trip to Jamaica, and me and a couple of my buddies thought it was a good idea to sneak off the compound, grab a taxi, and go into town and hang out for a while.
Wow.
And
play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Right. Yeah. So when we got back, the person who was in charge of us was extraordinarily disappointed and quite harsh with us. He said, you know, boys, it is one thing to live dangerously in the palm of God's hand. It's another thing to intentionally step out of it.
Well, that's good.
And so I think that's resonated with me for my life, obviously. I still remember that chastising. But what I think we need to remember in politics too is, like, there's a difference between preaching truth, right, and then just inciting rage.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So we can get people hating on us for both reasons, but there's a noble way to go about it, and there's a less noble way of going about it. And I'm sure, like, I just want to encourage people to be mindful of, like, yeah, Jesus did incite rage from individuals, but it was always purposeful and never wasteful, never just to, I don't see too many times in the Bible, or if any, that he just said things just to make people angry without teaching a lesson.
Well, even Elijah on Mount Carmel, right, when he was mocking the prophets of Baal, and I mean, he was enraging. I mean, they were enraged at him. He was making them so mad, and he was making fun of how foolish they were, right? But even that had a purpose to it, right? It was showing Israel the stupidity in the depths of foolishness that they had given themselves over to, and he was highlighting that. So even I go back to that story a lot too. It's like, okay, it's, you know, it's one thing to just mock somebody for the sheer enjoyment of mockery, and it's another thing to mock somebody to make a very deep spiritual point. And I think you got to be mindful of, like you said, which one are you going? What path are you going down? Because one is noble and the other is not. So I think that's a great point, Grant. And I love that you kind of expanded on that a little bit. Okay, hey, I want to do a quick thing before we wrap up here. Can I shoot some? Just some, you know, quick spitfire questions to you on sort of all the hot topics. Like, when people think of politics, they think of these issues. Where do you stand on them? Are you okay if I just kind of shoot them out at you and you just kind of give me a response on these issues?
you sure can. I've struggled at being short-winded now that I'm into the political arena, right? But we'll try.
That's all right. You can. I'm not going to cut you off if you're on a good roll. It's, you know, you can keep going. But all right, let's go with Second Amendment rights. Where do you stand on that?
I think that our rights should not be infringed upon. I think that as we consider gun control in the United States, what's more important than addressing all the symptoms, i.e. people shooting people, we need to address the root cause and the mental health and whatnot. We need churches to be more involved in raising people, raising children again. We need families to be strong so that people are less inclined to desire taking their rage out on others using a tool, guns. So again, we need to address the root cause, not the symptom.
Cool. All right. Border security, illegal immigration. What should we do? What should we do about it?
If I was king of Congress for the day, I would say that we need to shut down all immigration, total moratorium, because that would get people actually on board to solving it instead of just kicking the can down the road. I think Congress needs to use the purse strings to punish the executive branch for not keeping our border secure, get that shut down. And then fix the system. We've been talking about immigration systems since I was a kid. So I don't think we've been doing enough to address it.
Yeah, good. Continuing resolutions and the debt crisis. What do we do about that?
Yeah, I think omnibus bills are ridiculous. I think we've got faster ways of voting in Congress too. So I think that it would be really, really good if each budget line item had to stand on its own rather than packing them all together and, just giving us more and more billions and trillions of dollars worth of spending and debt. I think that a couple ways that we could shave it down is by defunding certain portions of the bureaucratic state. I think that would be good for society as a whole. I also think that it would be a good thing for Congress to have to pass a balanced budget amendment so that we can't continue this into the future. Because I'm a little bit resigned to the fact that my generation, I'm 34 years old, so I've got a little life to live yet. But my generation is not going to see financial restoration in the United States. But I would like it to start so that our grandchildren don't continue to bear the brunt of that which our grandparents started.
Yeah, that's good. What do we do about Ukraine and Israel, and how do we support our allies, but at the same time, make sure that they're fighting their own wars?
Yeah, I feel like Ukraine and Israel is not one to just like give a 30-second clip and then move off of. But I'm going to try somehow. So when it comes to Ukraine, I guess my thoughts. And my sentiments are, my heart goes out to the people of Ukraine. Generally speaking, tax dollars should not. However, now we're in the thick of it with them. And so I don't know what the right answer is to how we back off our support. I was with a group the other night. Several of them are sponsors for immigrants. They're not immigrants, but they're here because of the war.
Asylum seekers.
Thank you. Yeah. And then there were two individuals with me who were from Ukraine, and then there's another individual who's from Bosnia. And like just listening to their stories and all of it, and what mattered to them was super interesting. They talk about how they've got grave concern that a majority of this conflict is perpetuated because of policymakers in the United States and Ukraine and in Russia. I think that, I don't know, we just need to get the conflict to end, and people need to get to the table. And do I wish that Russia would just say, hey, you know what, we made a mistake, we're going to go back to Russia now? Sure, but that's not human nature, right? And so, to say I've got a straightforward answer, I don't. But I'm going to put it out there that I wouldn't be an advocate for continuing funding of the Ukrainian-Russian war. as far as Israel goes, that one's an interesting one too. I think that the moral of the story is don't go your own way and try to bring about God's blessing through your concubine, right? Because this conflict has been going on for ages. I think it's despicable what Hamas did attacking Israel. I think it's heart-wrenching how the people of Palestine are being affected by the retaliation for what their leaders have done. I think it's despicable, again, that Hamas is hiding beneath hospitals and other places where the women and children and infirm people are being housed. Like, there's got to be resolution to this, too. But I honestly, I don't think that we in Western culture can fully understand the depth of the hatred and relationship there. So it's to an extent things that they need to work out in their own time, in their own way. But I think we can be advocates for peace. I'm just not sure that we share the same paideia. And so I'm not sure that we are the best ones to say, This is how you guys should handle resolution. I think to an extent they need to work it out. So,
yeah, no, I agree. I think the best thing America could do for Israel is to stand up and tell the world to back off and let them do whatever they have to do to fix the problem. So it's funny, Ukraine keeps begging for more money, but Israel just says, just get out of our way. We can do it ourselves. We don't need more money. We just need the world to get out of our way and let us handle this conflict the way that we know how to handle it. And so, but no, that's good. Okay. Where are we? Let's see. Where do you stand on, a federal abortion ban?
Yeah. I don't think it's going to go back to the federal level. I think, Dobbs pretty decisively pushed down to the states. I've shared that where I stand on the issue of abortion is I'm pro-life, no exceptions. So that's where Grant Booker stands. And I do so confident that that's where God in biblical teaching, like life begins at conception, and then to natural death too. Like, I don't think assisted suicide and those things are okay. So that's where I stand as a policymaker. Where would I what would I vote for? And I said if policy is to my left today, and I've got an opportunity to move it closer to me, I'm going to pull it as close as I can, and then I'm going to take it, even if it's not exactly what I want, as long as it doesn't stay close-ended. And I came, like, my position on this came from my position on sharing the gospel. Like, every time I share the gospel with somebody, I want them to surrender their life to Christ and love Him, serve Him the way that I do. But that doesn't happen generally, right? Our responsibility is to tick that person, tick society and our communities one step closer to that which is true. So I'm going to keep doing that with everything that comes my way and trust that God will bring somebody behind me to finish the job.
That's good. Would you, one thing I ask people who have an issue with the federal abortion ban, how do we justify saying the states can decide on life, but then we outlaw slavery from a federal level and say the states can't decide on liberty? So life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So we outlawed slavery from the federal level with the 14th Amendment and made sure that everyone was, set free. And, this was an amazing season in our country. We celebrate that because we said, hey, slavery is absolutely wrong. And Georgia or South Carolina or Alabama, we're not going to give you the right to make a state law that says you guys would be okay with slavery. So, how do you justify saying, in one sense, we're going to outlaw this wicked thing over here that tramples on people's liberties, but we're not going to outlaw from a federal level this wicked thing over here that tramples on people's life. That's where I kind of get held up. It's like, man, if right is right and wrong is wrong. And to your point, I understand you're looking at it practically. Can it even happen? Maybe not. But yeah. Boy, we gotta try.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely be an advocate for making it happen at a federal level. Do I understand how, like, you reconcile the two? No, I feel like I'm just going off the cuff here, because I haven't talked about this really, but I feel like of all the branches, the judicial branch is kind of like the magic branch to me, the one that I don't understand quite as well, because they're supposed to do just that which Congress puts in place, right? They're supposed to interpret the laws, but then they start creating their own laws somehow by their unique interpretations of the laws that have been in place. And sometimes they dismantle the, or disarm the executive branch from enforcing the laws by acquitting people from, you know, like I don't fully understand how they are, they can dictate so much. And I know at Hillsdale, the topic of conversation is like, if the founders were disappointed with one thing today, it would be the judicial branch.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Judiciary.
Yeah. Oh, it's become another lawmaking branch, and it was supposed to be the weakest. But we always say three equal branches of government. It was never equal branches of government. It was always the judicial branch was supposed to be the weakest branch, and the legislative branch was the most powerful branch, and then the executive branch was the second most powerful branch. And so, but to your point, we need, I think, big time tort reform in this country, which takes a look at the judicial system and how we go about it. You're right. I think the founders would be absolutely rolling in their graves if they saw how abusive people have stepped into when it comes to the judicial branch. But I think I said the 14th Amendment earlier. I was thinking it's the 13th Amendment was abolish slavery, and then 14th was civil rights. So both of those go hand in hand. So that's just something I wrestle with, right? It's like, man, if right's right, wrong is wrong, shouldn't we be calling for a federal abortion ban too? But I am very thankful we have made a big step forward with the Dobbs decision, just like you were saying, that's great. I mean, that ended a lot of abortions in Indiana, you know, not so much in New York or California, but you know, we'll let the Lord deal with those yahoos at some point. But So anyway, I think that's a good spitfire round, man. I think we covered a lot of really important issues. Is there anything else before I let you go that you would want to just let listeners know that you just kind of, you know, it's sort of resonates with your heart, who you are, how you're going to govern, or and then tell us where people can find out more about you and how they can support you and get behind you if they like what they hear.
Sure. I guess the last thing I'd leave people with is just I want you to know my character. I'm trying to put myself out there as best as I can on printed materials and social media. It's very interesting and difficult to do at times. But I want people to know my character because issues always change. And I want you to know kind of generally how I'm going to respond to the various issues that are out there based on who I am. So you can check out our website, as you mentioned, bucherforus.com, B-U-C-H-E-R. Or we're on Facebook and Instagram quite a lot too, Twitter or X on it. And we have a YouTube channel too, where we're putting out more content to give you a little bit more insight into who I am and why I'm running and why I believe would be a great candidate for you. But really appreciate this opportunity. And to everybody who's listening, make sure you get out and vote May 7th if you're in Indiana and whenever your primary is elsewhere. We need God's people to rise up and be involved in the process if we want to see restoration in the USA. And I desperately want to see restoration in the USA.
Yeah, man. Amen to that. I think that is without a doubt my heart, your heart, and so many other people's hearts in this country. So did you know, I think Barna did a study a few years ago that there was 33 million Christians that don't vote in America.
Yeah.
33 million Christians. It's unbelievable. What a dereliction of duty right there. But anyway, yeah, man. So thank you for what you're doing. And just thanks for engaging in the process. I mean, it's just been a prayer of mine for many years that godly men and women like yourself would just step up and start to engage. And so if this inspired you and you, as you were listening to Grant speak, God's calling you to step up and engage some way too. Maybe it's not running for Congress, but it is doing something. It's either being an educated voter or running for something at the local level or getting behind good candidates, whether it's through prayer or financially or volunteering for good candidates, understanding policy and the way our system is built and how it works. So that way we just don't, you know, whine all the time. We actually know how to get in and fix it from a systems perspective. And so, but again, just let it be an encouragement to you to get off the bench. But Grant, thanks again for being here, man. It's Grant. So actually it's bookerforus.com is his website. So check him out, follow him on social media. And Grant, thanks for joining us, man. And we'll be watching.
Thanks so much, Micah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, this has been Jesus, Sex, and Politics. Hey, I'm going to really try to get Nathan back into the studio next week. I'm going to like drag him in here because I don't want him to get kicked off the show. But boy, he's just not really pulling his weight around here. So I guess we're going to have to wait and see. All right. Till next time. We'll see you.